It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Another day, another conversation regarding death. Death, dying, grief, the whole kit and caboodle. I am absolutely so jazzed that this woman, we were supposed to connect a while back because I had on a couple other people in this circle, in her circle. And I don't know if I forgot about it or if we just didn't connect, you know, how things fall through the cracks, but timing is everything. So one of the ladies that I've had on the show, Sarah Seidelman, who I absolutely adore, had posted or had commented under a TED Talk. And anytime Sarah points out, you know, hey, this is cool or you should listen to this, I'm curious. I'm like, oh, yeah, because Sarah has, she's just got great taste and she really knows this industry. So I went and listened to Death Doula Jane on her TEDx talk. It's 18 minutes stripped down. Total bravery and pain. And oh, it was just so good. And it's called What I Learned About Death. I would implore you to go find it. It's 18 minutes. It will change how you think about death and loss. It is just amazing. So I finally tracked Death Doula Jane down. I'm like, you have to come on the show. She's like, yeah, we talked about it a while back, but voila, she's here now. We're in the middle of this pandemic. I don't know how many weeks we've been on lockdown. I think it's been, for California, it's been a couple months now. I just am so glad that she's on the show. So her name is Jane Whitlock. She lost her husband at the tender age of 47. He was 47, I believe. And now she took a left turn and became a death doula. Welcome to the show, Jane Whitlock.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here. Now, Jane, what was it? What were you doing? Did you have a career prior to becoming a death doula?
I was in education. So I was a teacher and I was a coach and I was an athletic director. And my whole career had been with kids.
Okay. All right. So your beloved husband. Can you tell me, like, how did that happen? Tell me what preceded him leaving the planet.
Yeah. So he was a super healthy guy, marathon runner. He was a principal at a school in St. Paul. And he developed this cough in the summer, and he was really tired all the time. And it was never, ever on my radar that it could be cancer. So we went for about 2 months. He was going to the doctor and getting tests, and they couldn't find anything. And then eventually one of the x-rays showed a tumor on his kidney. Mm. And then that was in September, early September. And then we went through the normal roller coaster of finding a doctor and picking out a treatment and making a plan. And his kind of kidney cancer, the prognosis is really bad. There's very little treatment for it. He had this rare kind. So he was doing treatments for about 2 months, and then thankfully his doctor at Sloan Kettering said, nope, it's not working for you. You need to go home and put your affairs in order, which was such a gift because he really didn't want it. He wanted to keep pursuing all kinds of treatments. He was in relatively, you know, good health. I mean, we had 2 months. Our children were 9 and 12 when he went into hospice.
Wow.
And each of them made a bucket list of what they wanted to do with their dad in the time that he had left. And we really had a pretty amazing last 6 weeks of his life.
Wow.
I had no experience with death. I had never been with someone who died. I had never, I never thought about it really. And so I kind of went through that as a caregiver, sort of armored up, how I describe it. You know, I had to take care of these kids. I had to figure out logistics. I had to take care of Rob. And so I wasn't really emotionally present in a lot of ways because I was just like in everyday time. That's how I describe it. Hmm. And then after he died, I had this epiphany that life is so short. And we walk around like we are entitled to X amount of time. And that had all been shattered for me. So I really decided I'm going to try to figure out what my purpose is here. And I love teaching and I love kids, but I just wanted to kind of turn that question over to the universe and say, like, why am I here? Show me a path. And it was super clear that I just followed my intuition, which led me to just read about death, dying, and grief and educate myself in every possible way I could. And then I found out about end-of-life doulas, and I was like, this is what I'm supposed to be. And so Now I'm on this path.
Wow. I love that. You know, I mean, I just think when you listen, you know, and you tune into that intuition, and here you've gone through just a tragic loss of your beloved husband, who was a young man. You've got two children that are, they're not even teens yet, 9 and 12. That's crazy. But you go through this experience and you came out the other side by asking the question, why am I here? What is my purpose? So what did you tell the children? I mean, my goodness, they're just young. Are they boys, girls?
Two boys.
Yeah.
Boys. And we're an adoptive family. So they have already experienced the loss of a birth parent.
Okay.
So that was really just slayed Rob and I, just that we had to tell them this, another huge loss.
Wow.
You know, we were really honest through the whole process, just saying, you know, he has cancer. This is what cancer is, and cells divide rapidly, and your body can't handle it, and it makes you sick, and sometimes you die, and sometimes you get better, and it's nobody's fault. That's the thing with kids. You have to tell them over and over, but it's not your fault. It's not dad's fault. It's not mom's fault. It's nobody's fault. This kind of stuff just happens. And my kids took it very differently. The 12-year-old was, especially after Rob died, he was really angry. And one time I was driving his younger brother somewhere, and he said, why is Caleb so angry all the time? I said, I think he feels like it's unfair that his dad died. And then he waited for a minute, and he said, but dads and moms die all the time. Like, all over the world, kids are losing their parents. Why wouldn't it happen to us?
Hmm.
I'm like, well, listen to you, you little Buddha in the backseat. You know, handle it as we all do, just trauma. We metabolize it differently.
Wow. Tell me the story, because I love it. The story about, was it your younger son that crawled into bed with your husband, Rob, and what he said to him?
Yeah. So Christmas Eve night, I left Rob. He was at a facility hospice because he said, I don't want to die at home because it will be too traumatic for our kids to live in a place where I died. So for the last 2 weeks of his life, he moved to a hospice home. And I had left him Christmas Eve, and we came back Christmas morning, and there had been a huge shift. So I was talking to Rob's friend who had spent the night with him in the hall, and Reese just went into the room, and I came in 10 minutes later, and Reese had crawled into bed with his dad, was snuggled up with him, and Rob was in a sleep coma, so he looked like someone who is actively dying. He was non-responsive, his mouth is wide open, his lips are really dry. It's alarming, you know, and Reese was unfazed by all that. He was stroking his face and holding his hand and just pouring out his heart to him. In hospice, they do that, I'm sorry, I love you, forgive me, goodbye. Basically, the conversation you're supposed to have with people before they die. And he had never been educated about that. And he was just saying, thank you for being, I'm the luckiest boy in the world. I had the best dad. Thank you for all these things. And he just did basically a life review with his father about all the memories that they, you know, made together, and how he's going to miss him, and how he's really sorry for all his tantrums and all the bad words he ever said. And after he did, and this took a long time. I was just sitting there in shock. And some of the hospice nurses came in, and they're like, that is unbelievable. And then when he was done, he's like, okay, Mom, I'm ready to go. Dad, I'll see you around.
Oh, my God. God bless him.
Where that comes from, I don't know.
From the mouths of babes. You know, children are just, they're just so cool. I guess they're just so much closer to source, you know, maybe. I don't know.
But you know, my 12-year-old, he's a very anxious little guy, and he couldn't bring himself to come into the hospice most days because he was so sensitive to the pain and the death that was going on there. It was like he couldn't. It was like a magnetic field was repelling him.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we're all different, you know. We all come on the planet with a different set of rules and different agenda and a different personality. I just think that, you know, I don't know. Who knows? Your little Buddha in the back seat sounds like he might be here to teach us a lot about this transition period. Did you discuss with your children about what happens? Where was Rob going? Or how do you deal with that in your family?
Well, so we're not, so I'm spiritual, non-religious. Rob was really an agnostic, I would say, at best, atheist agnostic. He's like, I have no idea. He's like, do you think there's a heaven? Do you think I'll go? This is someone who, you know, he was a great, great guy. Everybody who knew him loved him. He was just kind and loving. And he had some real worry about where he was going to go and what was going to happen. And I don't have that worry. I just have this belief that we're spiritual beings and we go back to source and it's loving. But I couldn't export that to him.
Right.
And my kids never asked where he's going. I always said, you'll be able to talk to him. Like, you know, you can talk to Dad. I still now. I'm like, have you asked Dad about it? Actually, going back to following my intuition, as soon as Rob died, I started talking to him. And every big thing I would ask him before I fell asleep, I'm like, I don't know what to do about this. Like, one of my children's birth families came back into the picture. I was like, what am I forgetting to think about in regards to how I introduced them to their birth families? And so I would always say, ask Rob before I go to bed. And I'm telling you, in the morning, I would have some super crystal clear idea, an answer. So I tell that to my boys all the time.
I love that. Jane, from another Jane who talks to every single soul who's crossed before her, even those that I never met, and complete strangers and authors and you name it. I'm like a big fan. I just, you know, back to source, you know, wherever you are in the next room or, you know, I don't know. And so what harm is there from that connection? If anything, it brings great peace to me to be able to have a conversation with my mom or my dad or my best friend that just left, you know. She was super young and that was like crazy. Wow, this is just so interesting. So you're an educator. You lose this person, the person you think you're going to grow old with and walk into the sunset holding hands on a beach. He's now gone. Rob's gone, wherever Rob went. And now you are a death doula. By the way, if you're, you know, interested in getting in contact with Jane, it's deathdoulajane.com. What is it that, explain to our audience, because it seems like the whole doula thing, like everybody heard about a birth doula. And then just recently, which I love, the whole death doula thing seems to have this fabulous, it's come alive, for lack of a better term. I know that's silly. It's come alive, the death doula.
Yeah. So I feel because I was a caregiver who went through hospice, I love hospice, but the average stay in the United States is 11 to 17 days.
Wow.
So, you know, you're putting hospice behind the eight ball thing, like trying to handle, you haven't thought about death, you've made zero plans, and many times you haven't even had those conversations, even though this person has had a terminal illness for 6 months. So that's dropping a lot at hospice's doorstep, and I think there's a lot of misconceptions about how often and how frequently hospice is there to support you. So I feel 8 out of 10 people want to die at home, and I always say 8 out of 10 caregivers are entirely unprepared for what that means. You know, a lot of times you're giving medicines round the clock, so you're up all night, you're exhausted. There's things that people never see, like toileting. You know, eventually that person is going to be bedbound, and you need to have had that conversation ahead of time. Look, who do you want to handle this? Should we hire a professional? Do you want to pick one of your kids, your spouse? So when the moment comes, you're not trying to figure it out. Because what happens is then people get up, and they fall, and then that becomes a crisis. You have to call the fire department to get them up if you can't pick them up, and then
right.
people lose all their confidence around this thing. So a death doula is someone who can walk beside you and be with you as often as you need them there, and they can coach you, and they have time to stay with you in a way that hospice just does not. I mean, hospice is there 5% of the time.
Wow.
You know, if you think you're caregiving for 24 hours, so maybe you get 2 nurse visits a week, maybe you have a music therapist or a chaplain come for an hour here or there, they're not there that often.
Right.
So a doula really fills that gap, and I feel like can really be reinforce hospice's message with the family and can alert hospice to symptoms that are changing rapidly sometimes, and the family doesn't always know that this is something that actually I don't have to deal with. Like, hospice could give me a medication that would alleviate the symptom. I did it myself. I didn't call hospice because I had never been through it. I didn't know when I was supposed to call.
Right.
So a doula is just somebody who can be with you, coach you, but also open this space for you to get out of regular time and into kind of hallowed ground time, who can coach you about, you know, people, everyone wants to wait to the perfect moment to say goodbye. It's like, no, say goodbye every day. Those are the best conversations you are going to have of your life. So why are you holding on to them and only going to do it once and wait until maybe the person is no longer conscious?
Mm. You know? Oh, this is good. Do you get, so you've been a death doula for what, 4 years now?
In 2015 is when I took the class, and I probably launched my business like 2017.
Yeah.
So 3-4 years.
So you're around a lot of transition. Do you ever get down or sad or like, what am I doing?
Well, I don't. And I think most hospice folks will tell you they don't either, because it is some of the most intense. You know, I volunteer at hospice still every other week, or before COVID I did. And it was a hospice where people are only, I mean, the average stay is like 5 days. So frequently I see people one time and that is it. And I have such deep connections because a lot of these people are starving for someone to talk and process this experience with. And so I feel grateful. I feel grateful that I get to connect with these people. It's this, you know, I describe it, and this is a little woo-woo, but I feel like I am a conduit for love. And I can be talking to these people, and I just feel love flowing through me to listen to them and to not have answers and to just be with them. And I'm grateful because I'm with people who can no longer eat or swallow or open their eyes or move their limbs. So it makes me profoundly grateful for very simple things in my own life. It makes me have a better life. I get more from it than they get from me. I always tell people thinking about death and planning for death is the greatest 2-for-1 of all time, because you have a better death and you live a better life. It just is staggering to me that people don't want to talk about it, because it's like the golden egg.
Oh, Jane, you are another Jane Death Soul Sister. It's just amazing. I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm like, yes. Yes, you know, it just helps us embrace every day. The simplistic, you know, taking that walk with my puppy this morning and looking up at the blue sky and the puffy clouds and, you know, stopping by. There's this one yard that has magnificent roses and they're very close to the sidewalk. And so I stop and I'm like, ooh, that orange one smells great. You know, it's just those little things. That death really is the great equalizer. And the one thing that no matter what you try, you're not going to avoid it. It's our final destination, so to speak. So I love that you... What's that?
Go ahead. Well, just that we have this personal responsibility that people, for some reason, are totally okay shirking. Like, if you don't think about death your whole life, then... You know, it makes it harder on the doctors and the nurses and the people who are helping you, because you are unable to talk about it. So other people are making decisions for you, or they are tiptoeing around, or they're not saying what they need to say because your lack of planning and preparation keep that door locked. I mean, people die without ever being transformed by it, right? I mean, death is this transformational thing, and if you are curious and you are open, you will be transformed by it. I've seen it time and time again. But if you are afraid and you refuse to let people talk about it, you will not. You will miss out on, I think, one of the greatest opportunities of a lifetime.
Yeah, I love how you start off your TEDx talk about birth and death. Mm. Share on that, because that's exactly what you're kind of alluding to right now.
Right. I mean, they're the sacred bookends to our lives, and we treat birth so thoughtfully and carefully, and we want to think about the atmosphere that baby comes into this world in, and we want to think about the experience and how we can be supported and what our choices are in selecting a doula and selecting a doctor and selecting a hospital. And if we gave a fraction of that to death, I think it could be really healing for people, right? We could say I'm sorry to people, right? Every human has to say you're sorry, because none of us are perfect, and we all kind of put our baggage on each other in our lifetime. So what if at the end of your life, you apologize to those people, and you tell them what you're thankful for, and how you're going to carry your mother's spirit and memory with you through the rest of your life. And then it's like a springboard to healthy grief.
Mm.
But if we don't talk about it, then things get left unsaid, and then there's so much regret. I mean, I had a lot of regret about Rob because I had no idea how to prepare for that experience. You know, as a doula, I'm like, ooh, I wish I would have done this. Ooh, I wish I would have done that. And it would have been so good for my grief. I mean, I do think I'm a naturally good griever. Like, I gave myself over to grief, and I gave myself permission to do whatever that voice inside me was. You know, I feel like it's soul care, right? Like, how do you heal your soul? Well, you have to listen to your soul. You know, and if you're being forced to go back to work, or if you're being forced to put on a happy face, or if you're being forced not to talk about it, you can't listen to your soul. You're just like, your ego and everybody else's ego needs are running the show. And that's so, we're kind of a nation of pathologically bad grievers. If I may say so.
I love that. Hang on. We are a nation of pathologically bad grievers. Oh, my goodness. You are amazing. I am just sitting here. I'm taking notes because you're saying so many wonderful things that resonate with me. I just had a thought. Oh, it came back. Okay, so you are, this is, by the way, deathdoulajane.com, if you want to contact Jane. You work out of primarily the Twin Cities, the Minneapolis area, Minneapolis, St. Paul. What if I'm in California and I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, I want to hire Jane. Do you do phone consultations?
Mm-hmm. I do. Especially now, you know, that's kind of what I've switched over to. And I think if the support system is good enough, I think that can be, I mean, it's always better to be there in person, but I think it can be a next best option. I kind of find somebody in that support system who is like emotionally grounded.
Okay.
And then I doula them to doula the dying person and the rest of the family. So they text me or they call and say, hey, my mother-in-law is driving me crazy. She won't ever leave the room. What do I do about that? Or, oh my gosh, this symptom is happening. There's out of control pain. And then they call hospice. But it's like somebody else on their team who's been through it before. So it can be very effective.
Okay. Well, good. It's almost like you've got a little death doula network.
Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're looking for a doula in your area, the National End of Life Doula Alliance, NEDA, is a national umbrella for end of life doulas. So you can go there and look up your state and hopefully find a doula near you.
I love that. I think that's so cool. So you go through different, I would assume, a lot of training to become a doula.
Right. So there's no national accredited programs. So there's lots of different programs. And I always tell people who are interested in becoming a doula, your first step is not to get trained. Your first step is to volunteer at hospice.
Okay.
And just be with people who are dying and figure out if this is really for you.
Right.
And after you do that for 6 months or a year and you're really still super gung-ho, I tell people, you know, every program specializes in something different. Like maybe one program really focuses on your own mortality, because as a death doula, that's your first thing that you have to have squared away. And so if that's what you need help with, then do a program like that. I did Doula Givers out of New York City with Suzanne O'Brien. She's an ex-hospice nurse. So that's what the focus is kind of symptom management, communicating with hospice, assessing risk, very practical. And that's what I felt like I needed.
Okay.
But there's a ton of programs out there.
I love it.
And also, you don't have to be trained. You can be come to this from real life. You say you're a home health aide and you've been around it for forever. You can take a test through NIDA and get like kind of their badge of approval. That hopefully one day that will be seen by hospice and other folks as like an accredited sort of thing.
I love it. This show has gone by so quickly. DeathDoulaJane.com. Jane Whitlock is my guest today. Check it out. Just Google the TEDx talk. It's called What I Learned About Death with Jane Whitlock, and really worthy of a watch. I think that you'll understand so much more, and it inspired me to have her come on the show. So, Jane, in closing, any final words that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I would just encourage everybody to develop a daily death practice. And maybe that's talking to some relative who has passed. Maybe it is putting, you know, obituaries of friends and family who die on the inside of your closet door so you see it every morning. Mm. Maybe it is going on a walk and just appreciating what you hear and what you see and realizing, like, I am not going to be here forever. This is a short trip here for me.
Mm.
Because, again, it's the greatest two-for-one of all time.
Beautiful. Thank you so, so very much for coming on the show.
Thanks. I love talking to you. You're a great interviewer.
Aw, thank you. Well, you're just going to have to come back on the show because I think we barely scratched the surface here today.
I know. I have a lot to say about the next room. I communicate with Rob. So.
Yes. Good. Okay. Well, that will be part two with Death Doula Jane, because that I love that. I'm all about that. So we'll have you back on. Thank you for taking time. I know it's been just a very interesting time on the planet, and I just think that it's really good information for people to hear and to practice. A daily death practice. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Well, thank you. I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks again for tuning in to The Next Room. I really appreciate Death Doula Jane's time today. Jane Whitlock, go find her TEDx talk, and also just connect with her at deathdoulajane.com. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to The Next Room.